Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. The Club.
Hello. I've been following with interest the reaction of politicians and media spokesmen in Europe to recent developments in Austria. Basically, what has happened is that a man named Jörg Haider won enough votes in Austria's parliamentary elections last October so that his party, the Freedom Party of Austria, became the second strongest faction in the Austrian parliament. Last week, members of the Freedom Party became ministers in a coalition government with the Austrian People's Party, which has the largest faction. That's the way the system is supposed to work in a democracy, right? So, why are the Jews and their hangers-on around the world screeching and threatening and generally acting as if the sky were falling? Actually, that's not the way the system is supposed to work. The way it's supposed to work is that the only people who get elected are those who have been given a stamp of approval by the Jews, those who have been certified as politically correct. Really, it's worse than that. To have a major policy role in the U.S. government or the government of any major European country, any major white country, you're supposed to be a member of what amounts to a private club, the club, in which you have been carefully checked out and determined to be safe, which is to say, determined to be willing to take orders from the secret bosses of the New World Order. You can be a conservative a la Ronald Reagan or George Bush and be admitted to membership in the club, so long as the club's bosses are sure you'll do what you're told to do. Or you can be a flaming leftist a la Bill Clinton or Al Gore. The one requirement is that you be corrupt, that you be a traitor to your people, that you sell your soul in return for the privilege of club membership and the concomitant possibility of wealth and status and at least the semblance of power. If you have been accepted into the club, then you can run for public office and the controlled media will treat you as a legitimate candidate. If you're not in the club, you will be treated as a threat to public safety. You'll be treated as dangerous, irresponsible, and hateful, which is to say, you'll get the treatment Jörg Haider has been getting for the past couple of years, the sort of treatment Pat Buchanan gets whenever he makes a run for public office. In nearly all cases, this hysterically hostile treatment by the controlled media will frighten enough voters away from you to keep you from being elected. Only if you are a member of the club and have sworn obedience to the club's bosses, and they believe that you are in fact corrupt and that they own your soul, can you avoid this hysterical hostility. Of course, this rule only applies to positions of real power. You can still be elected county dog catcher without having been a Rhodes Scholar. In fact, you may even become president of Lower Slobovia if the New World Order bosses are too busy with matters elsewhere to control the elections in Lower Slobovia. But if the president of Lower Slobovia ever gets too uppity, then the Lower Slobovians may find cruise missiles and smart bombs coming their way as part of some United Nations humanitarian mission, ostensibly to keep the Lower Slobovians from ethnically cleansing the upper Slobovians or whatever. Or one may be elected governor of some remote mountainous province in Austria if the New World Order bosses are pretty sure that they have the rest of Austria firmly under control. That's the way it was with Jörg Haider. Working through a small conservative party, the Freedom Party, he got himself elected governor of the province of Carinthia, or Kärnten, as the Austrians call it. That's a mountainous, out-of-the-way part of the country down against the border with Slovenia. Even in such a seemingly harmless position, the Jews didn't like Hyder, and they soon began raising the alarm against him. For one thing, Hyder's father had been an SS soldier during the war, a member of Hitler's elite fighting force, and Hyder recklessly made a public statement to the effect that the SS soldiers really weren't a bad bunch. Quote, "Our soldiers were not criminals. They were decent people of good character," he said. That made the Jews go ballistic. The club members are under strict orders never to say anything which might be considered even remotely favorable to Hitler. It's okay to praise Stalin, whose regime murdered 30 million Russians and Ukrainians, because Stalin worked hand in glove with the Jews. But one must treat Hitler as worse than the devil himself, because Hitler is the one man who gave the Jews a real scare in this century. Then Hyder made other public statements. He pointed out that Hitler had had some very good economic policies and employment policies before and during the Second World War, and that the Austrians should consider adopting similar policies today. He also gave voice to the exasperation many Austrians and Germans feel about the Jews eternally having their hands out and demanding more money, more reparations for their alleged losses during the war. He said that continued payments to Israel would be appropriate only if the Germans, who had been driven out of their ancestral lands by the victorious Democratic and Communist allies after the war, also were compensated. 12 million German civilians were brutally expelled from territories the victorious conquerors decided should be given to Poland and Czechoslovakia, and nearly 3 million of them were murdered or died from exposure and starvation during the course of the expulsions. When Hyder compared the suffering of these German expellees to those of Jewish forced laborers and concentration camp inmates, the Jews exploded with rage and hatred. They began screaming that Hyder is a Nazi. But of course, Hyder is nothing of the sort, unfortunately. He is only a conservative. Like Atlanta Braves pitcher John Rocker, however, he is a conservative with a habit of occasionally saying what he has on his mind. And when the Jews began screaming at him and calling him a Nazi, Hyder, like Rocker, groveled and apologized. But he also became more and more popular with the Austrians. Despite all of the Jewish hate propaganda directed against him, Hyder's Freedom Party continued winning more and more votes in Austria's national elections. The Hyder policy, which has done most to make him popular with his fellow Austrians, is his anti-immigration policy. The Jews and the other members of the club have been pouring immigrants from the Third World into Austria since the 1960s, in line with their program to de-Europeanize Europe. Hyder has campaigned against this policy, calling for an end to immigration and an end to special benefits for immigrants, and the Austrians have responded by voting for him. Immigration from the non-white areas of the world is increasingly unpopular everywhere in Europe, but with club members in the top governmental posts everywhere, this popular discontent has been ignored by governments and condemned by the media as racism. In countries such as France, where the National Front of Jean-Marie Le Pen has campaigned on anti-immigrant issues, the uncompromising hostility of the controlled media and a solid front among club members in the government have kept the nationalists under control. And that's also the way it has been nearly everywhere else, including the United States. When Hyder surprised everyone last October by winning enough votes for his Freedom Party to become the second largest faction in Austria's parliament, the Jews and their servants everywhere unleashed a non-stop torrent of abuse on Hyder and on Austria. His party may be the second largest now, the Jews declared, but Hyder must have no role in the Austrian government. He must have no control over government policies. The government must remain entirely in the hands of people obedient to us, Otherwise, we will punish Austria severely. Of course, the Jews didn't use exactly those words, but that's exactly what they meant. Then, as it became clear a couple of weeks ago, that Haider's Freedom Party would indeed have a major role in Austria's government, the shrillness of the anti-Austrian abuse increased still further. We had the fascinating spectacle of leading politicians everywhere, France, Belgium, Britain, the Netherlands, Germany, Scandinavia, Spain, Portugal, demanding that the will of the Austrian people be ignored, that the results of Austria's democratic election be set aside, whatever was necessary to keep Haider's party out of the Austrian government. And these leading politicians everywhere are Democrats, men supposedly devoted to the idea that the will of the majority is sacred. They also are all members of the club. They are all men who have made a secret pact with the Jews, and that really is what counts. Democracy, the will of the people, majority rule, those are just words, just ideological flypaper for keeping the masses of voters confused. This really is an important point, and I want to emphasize it. The Jews and their fellow club members always push democracy. Democracy, they declare, is the only acceptable form of government anywhere, except in various little third world Bantustans, where it's okay to have a head witch doctor for life or whatever, because there's no chance that such a system will catch on elsewhere. Everywhere in the white world, however, democracy is required. But the reason that the Jews love democracy so much is only because it is the easiest system for them to control. Whoever controls the media controls the majority of the votes. Democracy works just the way the Jews want it to work, except when someone who isn't a member of the club slips through a crack and gets elected, as in Austria. Then we get a chance to see what the Jews and their lackeys really think about democracy. To restate the obvious, what's important to the Jews and to the other members of the club is not democracy, but continued control by themselves. When democracy serves the purpose of keeping them in power, they are fervent Democrats. But when democracy instead becomes a threat to continued Jewish rule, they are just as fervent anti-Democrats. So last week, as Haider's people entered the Austrian government and took over the key ministries of defense, justice, and finance, and also the Ministry of Social Security, which handles welfare payments and other special benefits to immigrants, Israel's ambassador left in a huff, followed shortly by the ambassador of the ever-obedient United States, while the top politicians in other countries blustered and threatened economic sanctions, a severing of political contacts with countries belonging to the so-called European Union, exclusion from NATO participation, and so on. The media were full of dire warnings that allowing Austrian voters to run their own country poses a major threat to democracy everywhere. Jews in Vienna used megaphones to whip up mobs of angry immigrants who smashed store windows and overturned and burned police cars. More than 30 policemen were injured by the rioters. One Jew protester in Vienna, Paul Rubinstein, told a reporter, "This is no longer a Viennese problem, or even an Austrian one, but a world one." There really seems to be no limit to Jewish impudence. Can you imagine a gang of Austrians going to Israel and stirring up a mob of Palestinians in Tel Aviv, say, to burn Jewish police cars, and then making arrogant statements to the press about what would and would not be tolerated in the makeup of the Jewish government? Mr. Rubinstein, of course, is right about one thing. What's happening now is a world problem. It's not just the Austrians who have a problem, but also the Russians and the Serbs and the Germans and the people in every country, including America, who want to regain their freedom and their national sovereignty. It really is unfortunate that Jörg Haider isn't the new Hitler that the Jewish hate propaganda makes him out to be. His party is still increasing in popularity, primarily the result of Austrian resentment against the anti-Haider pressure being applied by Jews and other club members. If new elections were held today, polls indicate that the Freedom Party would gain another 15% of the vote and become the largest party in Austria. But as a conservative, Haider will compromise with his people's enemies. He will slow the rate of decline in Austria for a few years, but he will not make the fundamental changes in Austrian society needed for renewed health, nor will he ignite the revolution needed to cleanse Europe. It is notable, however, that most of the Freedom Party's support comes from young people, not elderly conservatives. It is conceivable that the party could evolve in a more radical direction, although that is not likely. The two main benefits for the world in the recent success of the Freedom Party in Austria are, first, that this success certainly will encourage nationalists in other countries by demonstrating that the club is not always able to have its way. And second, the Jewish reaction and the reaction of the other club members to the Freedom Party's success provide for the world as clear a demonstration as we could want of the totally corrupt nature of the clique which now rules the world, the New World Order clique. Watching all of these supposed Democrats suddenly change their tune on command and begin denouncing the democratic process in Austria when it doesn't produce the results they want is a truly enlightening experience. Now I want to give you a 5-minute synopsis of the political history of our world. This synopsis will be greatly oversimplified, of course, and it certainly will be based on an incomplete knowledge of the facts. I don't have any secret pipeline to the truth, but I do observe what is happening in the world around me, and I do try to make sense of it. I do look for patterns. I do look for common threads. I do try to understand what's behind it all. And this is what I see. I see that for 10,000 years or so, we pretty much ran our own affairs in Europe. Different groups of us did things in different ways. Some of us governed ourselves with a council of elders, a gerousia. Others had a tribal chieftain. Some of us had kings. At the dawn of history, aristocracy was the general rule for our people. But here and there, we tried different things at different times. In Greece and in Rome, monarchical aristocracy evolved into a sort of aristocratic democracy where the nobles, the landowners, got together in a senate or a bully and voted on policies. Sometimes these aristocratic legislators became sloppy or lazy or careless, and they got too many people involved in the voting. Things became too democratic, and then either the people would be conquered by their more fit neighbors, or a strong man, a dictator, a Caesar, would take charge and straighten things out for a while, and a republic would become an empire. At any given time, some people liked the system and some people didn't. No matter what the system, some of our people were happy and some weren't. Sometimes things were stable for a long time, and sometimes we had much turmoil with one war or revolution after another. But the important thing, the most important thing, is that we ran things ourselves. We conducted our own affairs, for better or for worse. And on the whole, we did a better job of conducting our affairs than non-Europeans anywhere. We fought among ourselves almost continually, but we prospered nevertheless. We advanced. We made progress. Sometimes we had temporary setbacks, as when the Moors conquered Spain in the 8th century, and the Mongols conquered Russia in the 13th century. but nearly always we whipped anybody who got in our way. We ruled the world and ruled it as we pleased at the beginning of the 20th century. We had many different sorts of government and leaders with different ideologies. We had many rivalries and conflicts among ourselves. But we Europeans, we white people, ran the show. Some very unhealthy changes had occurred in the white world during the 19th century, however. During the Napoleonic Wars in the first part of the 19th century, the Jews in Western Europe were permitted to leave their ghettos and were given civil rights. Until the 19th century, wise rulers had protected their people from the Jews by keeping the Jews isolated. But in the 19th century, they began infiltrating European political, cultural, and social institutions. They began agitating among the lowest European social classes, among the rabble and the resentful pseudo-intellectuals. One of them, Karl Marx, the father of communism, called for the communist overthrow of Gentile society. By the beginning of the 20th century, the Jews had organized two strong movements aimed at acquiring power for themselves. The communist movement, directed outward toward Gentile society, and the Zionist movement, directed inward. Then came two ruinous, fratricidal wars, each more destructive than any previous war in the history of mankind. And in both of these wars, the Jews played a major role behind the scenes. The first of these wars served not only to destroy the long-established social and political order in Europe, but to empower both Jewish movements, communism and Zionism. The behind-the-scenes dealing in which the Jews promised British politicians to bring America into the First World War on the side of Britain in return for Palestine being given to the Jews is especially illuminating. This undercover deal between Britain's politicians and world Jewry resulted in U.S. President Woodrow Wilson, a club member who had campaigned on an anti-war platform, suddenly switching his position and demanding U.S. involvement in the war in Europe, even though no vital U.S. interests were served thereby. It made a world war out of the European war and prolonged it by 2 years, leaving the Russian monarchy so weakened that it could not resist a communist takeover. The Second War finished the job started by the first. With no vital American interest threatened, club member Franklin Roosevelt again converted a European war into a world war, which rescued both communism and Jewish power in Europe from Hitler and finished the destruction of Europe's old power structures and institutions and values. It established the club, this kosherized old boy fraternity of corrupt politicians, as the hidden but nonetheless supreme political institution. It homogenized political structures and ideologies everywhere in the West, making mass democracy and political correctness mandatory. And it elevated the Jews to the status of those who can do no wrong. And that's the way it has been ever since, in Austria and elsewhere. Thanks for being with me again today.